Well, thank you, Brother Chairman, and good morning, my dear brothers and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ. This morning, then, we take up the balance of our study as we move into these chapters of the last few chapters of the first of Chronicles. And you'll remember that in our session yesterday, we left David alone in his bed. He was too cold. He was too old. He was too weak even to attend the coronation of Solomon his son. The most he could do, you will remember, is that he could nod in approval from his bed when word was brought to him that his son was crowned. But his mind was strong. Do you remember that? And his thoughts were racing to the fulfillment of all the glorious things that God had promised him in the covenant. And you'll remember how we discovered in Psalm 71 that David had prayed especially that God might preserve him, even in old age, until he had showed God's strength to the generation to come. Well, God was going to answer that prayer, brothers and sisters, and bless his servant with a mighty recovery. And what we're going to discover, God willing, in our study this morning is that God was going to reinvigorate his body so that he could fulfill what already had vitality in his mind. And in the goodness of God, David was going to arise from his bed. Now, do you see in the first of Chronicles then, chapter 23, and the first verse, which takes us up to where we were in our story yesterday, the record says in 1 Chronicles 23 and verse 1, "So when David was old and full of days, he made Solomon his son king over Israel." And you'll remember, by the way, that in that one single verse in the 1 Chronicles 23 lies the whole of the 1 Kings chapter 1. The whole of the first chapter of Kings is found inside, folded inside, the first of Chronicles 23, verse 1, which gives us the drama of the circumstances that led to that first anointing of Solomon. But now verse 2 says this, "And David gathered together all the princes of Israel with the priests and the Levites. The Levites were numbered from the age of 30 years and upward, and their number by their polls, man by man, was 38,000, of which 24,000 were set forward to the work of the house of God." And now we're going to have the unfolding of these next few chapters, which will show us David's labors to establish the system of worship that would take place in the temple, which, by the way, he would never see. He would never once see the temple in all of its majesty and grandeur, but he's going to plan for it as if the temple is really there. And I believe that in his mind's eye, David saw that temple. He saw that house. He walked within its courts, as we shall see by and by in our study this morning. Well, this is what it was going to look like in terms of the order of events that David was going to organize. Was all going to be based, you see, on the number 24, the 24 courses. And what we're told in this chapter is that there was going to be 24,000 Levites divided into various courses of activity surrounding the house of Yahweh. And that would become the symbolic number, you see. And we're going to find in the 1 Chronicles chapter 24 that there are going to be priests that will execute the priestly office in the sanctuary. And there'll be 24 courses of them. And in the 1 Chronicles chapter 25, there are going to be singers to give thanks and to praise in the sanctuary. And there's going to be 24 courses of them. And in 1 Chronicles chapter 26, there's going to be gatekeepers to guard the holiness of the sanctuary. And there's going to be 24 courses of them. And lastly, in the 1 Chronicles chapter 27, there's going to be captains to serve the king on all matters of business, 12 men, each of whom will command 24,000 who will operate under the disposal of that captain. And the whole system of the process of those that would labor in the house of God revolves around the number 24. 24 sets of priests, 24 sets of singers, 24 sets of gatekeepers, 24,000 Levites organized into their activities. So let's turn that off then, and now we're going to move into these chapters, and of course you'll understand, given that we're going to go from chapter 23 to chapter 27, that we must of needs necessarily be somewhat brief. Well, let me show you what he did. In the first of Chronicles, in chapter 23, as we've said, he's going to number them for the service. And you'll see that it said in First of Chronicles 23, verse 24, as we read it together, "These were the sons of Levi after the houses of their fathers, even the chief of their fathers, as they were counted by number of names by their polls." And so David has numbered the Levites on this occasion, just as he had numbered the Gentiles in chapter 22, and just as he had numbered the whole nation in chapter 21, but it's all for the same reason. The focus of these chapters is undeviating, that it's all to do with the house of God that's about to be established. But what we're going to look at particularly this morning is the fact that he organizes them, as we've said, and this is the title of our study, into courses. David, well, here it is, verse 6 of this chapter, actually. David divided them into courses. And it's these courses of activity that we're going to see in David's labors this morning. So in chapter 24, then, in verse 1, it says, "Now these are the divisions of the sons of Aaron." But that word divisions is the same word translated courses in chapter 23, verse 6. It's the same word. These are the courses of the sons of Aaron. So in fact, what we've got in chapter 24, verses 1 to 19, are the courses of the priests themselves. Now, just notice what it says, because it's quite interesting. It says, "The sons of Aaron, Nadab and Abihu and Eleazar and Ithamar, but Nadab and Abihu died before their father and had no children. Therefore, Eleazar and Ithamar executed the priest's office." And David distributed them, both Zadok of the sons of Eleazar and Ahimelech of the sons of Ithamar, according to their offices in their service. Now, do you remember, just before we go on, that there was a prophecy given on an earlier occasion that said this about the priests? "And I will raise me up a faithful priest that shall do according to all that is in mine heart and in my mind. And I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before mine anointed forever. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left in thine house shall come and crouch to him for a piece of silver and for a morsel of bread, and shall say, Put me, I pray thee, into one of the priest's offices, that I may eat a piece of bread." Now, does anyone remember where that prophecy comes from? "Everyone that is of thine house shall come and crouch to him and ask to be put in one of the priest's offices." Well, the answer is, and you don't need to turn it up, but you might like to take a note of it, against the first of Chronicles, chapter 24 and verse 3, it's the first of Samuel, chapter 2, verses 35 and 36. And the reason why it's interesting is because this was a prophecy uttered concerning the decline of the house of Ithamar, to whom Eli belonged, and of the rise of the house of Eleazar. And the promise was given in the days of Eli that his own family would be reduced, and that the other side of the priestly family would be increased, so that finally members of his family of the line of Ithamar would come to the line of Eleazar and ask for some responsibility. It was a prophecy of the waxing of the house of Eleazar and the waning of the house of Ithamar. Well, do you know that that prophecy given back in the days of Samuel is already coming to pass right here in the days of David? Because do you see what it says now in the first of Chronicles chapter 24 and verse 4? It says that when David distributed both to Zadok of the sons of Eleazar and to Ahimelech of the sons of Ithamar, verse 4 says, "There were more chief men found of the sons of Eleazar than of the sons of Ithamar. And thus were they divided among the sons of Eleazar. There were 16 chief men of the house of their fathers, and 8 among the sons of Ithamar, according to the house of their fathers. So now the house of Eleazar has already waxed to twice the size of the house of Ithamar. The prophecy in the days of Samuel is being fulfilled, you see. And of course, the 16 of Eleazar and the 8 of Ithamar comes to the 24 courses of priests. So verse 5 says, thus were they divided by lot, one sort with another, for the governors of the sanctuary and the governors of the house of God. When it says there, by the way, that they were divided by lot, which of course was the impartial assessment, one sort with another, the Revised Standard Version renders that phrase all alike. Thus were they divided by lot, all alike. And I think that what we're being told there, you see, was priesthood was not based on ability. It was based upon the principle of representation. And so all the priests were alike, voted or divided by lot in a completely impartial manner. And in fact, we know that that's the case because at the end of verse 6 it says, right at the end of the verse, one principal household being taken for Eleazar, and one taken for Ithamar. Now the first lot came forth to Jehoiarib. And what we're being told there is that each one was taken in sequence. One from Eleazar, one from Ithamar, one from Eleazar, one from Ithamar, completely impartial until the lots were all divided. Which means, of course, by the way, that what happened in the courses of the priests is that by the time the first 16 courses were fulfilled, one from Eleazar and one from Ithamar, the whole of the line of the house of Ithamar was now exhausted. And the last 8 courses of priests must have been entirely from the house of Eleazar to make up the 24. And so it says in verse 18, the 3 and 20th to Deliah and the 4 and 20th to Maaziah, these were the orderings of them in their service to come into the house of Yahweh according to their manner under Aaron their father, as the Lord God of Israel had commanded him. So these are the courses of the priests, verses 1 to 19. And then from verses 20 to 31, what David does is appoints those Levites that had special responsibility to serve before the priests. Not the Levites in general, but the Levites that were meant to support and look after the priestly orders themselves. And that's from verses 20 to 31. And in verse 31, we're told how they were apportioned, because the record says, these likewise cast lots over against their brethren, the sons of Aaron. And I think the implication of verse 31, by the way, is that the Levites that ministered unto the priests were divided into matching courses by the same impartial process of the lot by which the priests themselves had been selected. So 24 courses of priests are now matched by 24 courses of Levites that support the priests, and by the same process of lot. See, everything is precisely organized at this particular point of time. And then chapter 25, verse 1 says, moreover, David and the captains of the host separated to the service of the sons of Asaph and of Heman and of Jeduthun, who should prophesy with harps and psalteries and cymbals. So now we've got the singers. Now we've got the courses of the singers. And chapter 25 will tell us about the apportioning of those courses. So verse 2 says, of the sons of Asaph. And when you read that verse, you'll find that there are 4 sons of Asaph who will participate in the courses. And then verse 6 says, of Jeduthun, and we find that he will have 6 sons, so that makes 10. And then in verse 4 it says, of Heman, the sons of Heman. And when we count up the sons of Heman, we find he had 14 sons, and that makes 24 courses. And so it says in verse 6, all these were under the hands of their father for song in the house of Yahweh, with cymbals and psalteries and harps, for the service of the house of God, according to the king's order, to Asaph, Jeduthun, and Heman. So the number of them with their brethren that were instructed in the songs of Yahweh, even all that were cunning, was 288. And the record says, verse 8, and they cast lots, ward against ward, as well the small as the great, the teacher as the scholar. Now the first lot came forth to Asaph. And so now we have the beginning of the 24 courses of singers that will run right to the end of this chapter, chapter 25. And they're appointed by lot in the same way as the priests and the ministering Levites. And when it says in verse 7 that there were 288 of them, that just happens to equal 24 courses with 12 singers in each course. 24 courses and 12 singers in each of those makes the 288 instructed and cunning singers of the first of Chronicles chapter 25 and verse 7. And then as with the priests and as with the singers, so with the doorkeepers. Because in chapter 26 now, the record says that there will be courses of doorkeepers as well. And so the record says in verse 1, concerning the courses of the porters. And again in verse 12, among these were the courses of the porters. And again in verse 19, these are the courses of the porters. And they're going to be appointed in exactly the same way, because verse 13 says, and they cast lots, as well the small as the great, according to the house of their fathers for every gate. And so now we're going to come to the porters or the doorkeepers, because the word porter here is from the Latin, which means gate. So it's not a porter as one who carries baggage in the sense in which we would use the word today. They were the gatekeepers. And they guarded every entrance into the house of God from every possible direction. Because you'll see what it says, verse 14. The lot eastward fell to Shelemiah. Then for Zechariah his son, a wise counselor, they cast lots. His lot came out northward, to Obed-Edom southward, to his sons the house of Asupim, and Hosah, the lot came forth westward. On every side of the house of God, wherever the gates were, you would find doorkeepers. They guarded the sanctuary on every side, on all four quarters. And by the way, I think there were probably 24 courses, because, well, let's count them up, shall we? Verse 17 says, eastward were 6 Levites, northward 4, so that's 10, southward 4 a day, so that's 14, and toward Asupim 2 and 2, so that's 18, at Parbar westward 4 at the causeway, so that's 22, and 2 at Parbar itself. So that's 24. And then verse 19 says, these are the courses of the porters. The fact is, brothers and sisters, you couldn't get into the temple courts without arriving at a gate. And you couldn't get through the threshold of the gate without approval. And you couldn't be approved unless you'd passed the scrutiny of one of the doorkeepers. And you see, they wanted to admit the godly and the righteous and the holy and the humble and the contrite. They wanted to admit all those who would joyfully submit to the divine requirements to approach him in worship. But they also wanted to deny entrance to the unclean, to the proud, to the profane, to the unholy, to the self-opinionated, to the aggressive, to the rebellious. And we're told that, by the way, expressly in the 2nd of Chronicles 23, verse 19. They wanted to keep the gates open for those who would come in the right spirit, and they wanted to bar entrance for those whose spirit was wrong. And what everybody learned when they came to the house of God was that you could not just come as you pleased. You had to come in the right spirit. And there, standing on the threshold of the gate, were the doorkeepers who would see to the very best of their ability that those who entered into the courts of Yahweh's house were holy in conduct and attitude, so that they might draw near to him in an acceptable manner and find the God who they sought to worship in that house. And then we're told in verses 20 to 28 of this chapter of the apportionment of the king's treasurers. And we're told that of those in verse 20 of chapter 27, of the Levites, Ahijah was over the treasures of the house of God. And so the king's treasurers will now be appointed from verse 20 through to verse 28. But you see, they were special treasures, because the record says that these treasures, verse 27, were the treasures of battles which had been dedicated by David and others for the maintenance of the house of God. It was all focused on the house of God. These were things that had been set by David for many years so that they might be able to be used for the upkeep and maintenance of the house of God once it was established. And so what David is doing here at the end of his life is drawing on things that he's been planning for years to do. This didn't all happen at this moment of time. It's only now he's going to organize it, but the gathering of the resources has been taking place clearly over many years. And now verse 29 to verse 32 talks about the king's officers, who will also be appointed as responsible for the king's business. And then in chapter 27, as we've said before, in the first few verses, right through to verse 15, actually, we've got the appointment of the 12 captains, each for a month, with those who would support that captain in his labours. And then the princes of the tribes, from verses 16 to 22, the numbering of the nation, verses 23 to 24, and finally the king's officers, in the first of Chronicles, chapter 27, verses 25 to 34. So let me just make one or two comments then about these chapters. I just want to pick out a couple of really important themes which I think we need to learn something from. Because you see, clearly, if you come back now to chapter 23, clearly all these events which now unfold in these chapters have all been set in motion from that day, verse 1, when Solomon was made the king. It all started from that moment. And as soon as the record opens, we're struck with the fact, are we not, brothers and sisters, in these chapters, that we have a revived and energetic man brimming with enthusiasm and activities and plans. This is not the old man lying upon his bed prostrate that cannot move. David's up and off and away, is he not? He's now busy in the activities of organization here. And I want to notice two important themes that run through this chapter. And here's the first one. The first is that David's hand will personally touch every single aspect of this planning for the temple. Nothing will be left to chance. David will be everywhere in this story. Why? And I think that the reason is because as an old man, brothers and sisters, David knew that spiritual strength in an ecclesia, the spirit of zeal and dedication, the clear distinction between what's right and what's wrong, none of this happens spontaneously or by accident. Ecclesias are spiritually strong when principles have been established in advance, when they've been thought out beforehand, when things have been considered in terms of what will best advance the principles of sound conduct and sound behavior and sound practice and sound worship. None of that happens by accident in ecclesial life, brothers and sisters. And the astounding lengths to which David went in this particular record tells us just how vital David himself considered that planning to be. His work was an absolutely huge undertaking to cover every aspect of worship in the kingdom that would follow. Just have a look at this and see if we're not struck by that idea. First of Chronicles, maybe coming back to chapter 22 just for a moment. So, here's the first of our two key themes. First of Chronicles 22 and verse 2. It's just to do with David. And David commanded to gather together the strangers that were in the land of Israel, and he set masons. Verse 3, and David prepared iron. Verse 5, so David prepared abundantly for the house of God before his death. You notice that, by the way, before his death. If we're not in the last year, we're certainly getting close, aren't we? Chapter 23, verse 1. So when David was old and full of days, he made Solomon his son king over Israel. And he, David, verse 2, gathered together all the princes of Israel, verse 6. And David divided them into courses. Verse 25. For David said, Yahweh Elohim of Israel hath given rest unto his people, that they may dwell in Jerusalem forever, and also unto the Levites, that they shall no more carry the tabernacle, nor any vessel of it for the service thereof. For, and notice these words, by the last words of David, the Levites were numbered. By the last words. This is clearly at the end of his life, is it not, brothers and sisters? By the last words of David, the Levites were numbered in this particular way. Chapter 24, verse 3. So David distributed the courses of the priests, both Zadok of the sons of Eleazar and Ahimelech of the sons of Ithamar. Verse 6. And Shemaiah, the son of Nethaneel, the scribe, one of the Levites, wrote them before the king. Verse 31. The Levites, appointed to minister unto the priests, verse 31, these likewise cast lots over against their brethren, the sons of Aaron, in the presence of David, the king. Chapter 25, verse 1. Moreover, David and the captains of the host separated to the service of the sons of Asaph and Heman and Jeduthun, who should prophesy with harps. Verse 6. All these were under the hands of their father for song in the house of Yahweh, with cymbals and psalteries and harps for the service of the house of God, according to the king's order. Chapter 26 and verse 26, concerning the treasuries of the house of God, verse 26, which Shelomith and his brethren were over all the treasures of the dedicated things which David the king and the chief fathers had dedicated. Verse 31, and look at this, among the Hebronites, concerning the appointment of the king's officers, among the Hebronites was Yeriah the chief, even among the Hebronites, according to the generations of his fathers, in the 40th year of the reign of David, they were sought for. Now, you might like to take a note of chapter 29, verse 27, against that verse, because the 40th year of David, by the way, is the year of his death. This is the last year of David's life, the 40th year. And we're expressly told on this occasion that these officers were appointed in the last year of David. And it's David that appoints them, as verse 32 says, his brethren, men of valor, 2,700 chief fathers, whom King David made rulers. Chapter 27 and verse 23. David took not the number of them from 20 years old and under. No, David numbered from 20 years old up. In the account of the Chronicles of King David, it would be recorded. You see, David's absolutely everywhere in the story, isn't he? Where's the old man that lies immobile upon his bed? He's gone. He's replaced by a veritable dynamo who springs off his bed and, with Solomon by his side, plunges now into the exhausting task of preparing the nation for the worship of the house of God. He's revived. Is he not? His prayer in Psalm 71, let my strength not fail until I've showed thy power to the generation to come. That prayer had been answered, had it not? Come back, by the way, just to chapter 23, and let me show you just one key phrase. Verse 31. First of Chronicles 23, verse 31. To offer all burnt offerings unto Yahweh in the Sabbath, the new moon, on the set feasts by number, according to the order commanded unto them. See, that's the key, isn't it? According to the order commanded unto them. See, every man in these chapters knew exactly what he was going to do. He knew exactly where he should be, when he should be, and what he should do. And he knew what to do because David had organized it all, because there was order in everything. Do you remember this phrase? Let everything be done decently and in order, says the apostle in the 1st of Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 40. And the spirit of David's preparation for the house is the spirit of what should go on in the ecclesial house, says Paul, that same principle of careful planning might be seen in all that we do. And by the way, lest we should think that this was all David's own idea, you realize, of course, that the whole arrangement of this system was given to David by inspiration. He collaborated with Samuel, as we know, 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 25, 1 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 22, 1 Chronicles chapter 26, verses 26 to 28, 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 29, he'd collaborated with Samuel years before concerning all of this, but it was given to David by inspiration. We're told that later on. So these arrangements were not simply the expression of David's own personal opinions on how he thought things ought to be done. There was a divine warrant for the arrangements that would be set forth by David in these marvelous chapters of planning and preparation. And here's the second key thing that I think pervades these particular chapters. It's another key idea. It's David's intensity of focus on the house of God, which he loved. His fervor for the house of Yahweh's praise is still, and perhaps especially now, the driving force in his life before he dies. Well, here it is. Come and have a look. 1 Chronicles chapter 23. This is clearly the dominant thinking in David's mind. 1 Chronicles 23, verse 4. The 24,000 who would set forward, who would advance, who would oversee the work of the house of Yahweh. That's the key. Verse 24, these were the sons of Levi after the house of their fathers, even the chief of the fathers, as they were counted by number of names by their poles, that did the work for the service of the house of Yahweh. Verse 28, because their office was to wait on the sons of Aaron for the service of the house of Yahweh. And again, at the end of verse 32, all these things were put in the charge of the sons of Aaron, their brethren, in the service of the house of Yahweh. And that would be the special responsibility of the priests, as chapter 24 would tell us. And so verse 19 says, after the 24 courses of priests are appointed, verse 19 says, these were the orderings of them in their service to come into the house of Yahweh according to their manner. And as with the priest, so with the singer, chapter 25, verse 6, all these were under the hands of their father for song in the house of Yahweh, with cymbals and psalteries and harps for the service of the house of God according to the king's order. And as with priest and as with singer, so with doorkeeper, chapter 26, verse 12, among these were the courses of the porters, even among the chief men, having wards one against another, to minister in the house of Yahweh, And as with the doorkeepers, so with the treasurers, verse 20. And of the Levites, Ahijah was over the treasures of the house of God. And you see, you're struck with this idea as David goes about his business in these chapters that he's absolutely focused, is he not, on that house, brothers and sisters. And you see, what's marvelous to me about this, what's absolutely marvelous, is that David planned for the worship of this house as if it was already there. It was so real to him. He touched it, brothers and sisters. He felt it. He walked around. He said, now, I want you over there, and I want you to actually come. Now, you come around that corner there, the door. There is, come through that door. Well, there's no door. Well, yes, there is. There is a door. There'll be a door. Don't worry. There'll be a door right there. You're going to come around the corner and along that causeway just there. And I want the singers over there. At that point, when you see the priest come out of there, then you'll start to sing the song of Yahweh. And I want you to, over there. And David could see it all in his mind. He walked in the courts of that house. He lived in that house. He would never see it in his lifetime. But he walked in its courts. Did he not, brothers and sisters? This old man with a young mind. And do you know that I think at this very moment of time, David wrote a psalm. So hold your hands in the first of Chronicles, perhaps in the first of Chronicles chapter 23. And let's have a look at the psalm that I think David quite possibly wrote at this precise moment of time as he had arisen off his bed to perform these labors ere he died. Well, it's Psalm 92. So, 1 of Chronicles 23, in your left hand, and Psalm 92. In your right hand. Now, in Psalm 92, it doesn't say it was written by David. In fact, the heading of the psalm simply says, the prophet exhorts to praise God. But although the heading is not attributed to David, by the way, it's not attributed to anyone else either, but I believe that this psalm was written by David. And I think that this was the moment of its writing. Now, let me just give you two or three things just before we move into the psalm itself in terms of why that might be so. Do you notice how that in verse 3 of Psalm 92, the writer says that we ought to praise God upon an instrument of 10 strings? Do you know that that phrase or that word in the Hebrew 10-stringed instrument is only found in two other places? It's found in Psalm 33, verse 2, and Psalm 144, verse 9. It's the only two other places that that 10-stringed instrument is found. And they're both considered to be Psalms of David. And you notice in Psalm 92, verse 3 as well, it says at the end of the verse, upon the harp with a solemn sound. But in the margin, you'll notice that the word solemn sound is translated as hagaion. And that word hagaion, solemn sound, is only found in two other places. It's found in Psalm 9, verse 16. And Psalm 19, verse 14. And they're both, why, Psalms of David. Only two other places that that word is used. And whoever writes the psalm says this in verse 15, at the end of the psalm, the very end of the psalm, to show that Yahweh is upright. He is my rock, cries the psalmist. And you know that that's David's special expression. That's what David says in Psalm 18, verse 2, in Psalm 18, verse 46, in Psalm 19, verse 14, in Psalm 28, verse 1. In Psalm 31, verse 2, in Psalm 62, verse 2, in Psalm 71, verse 3, in Psalm 92, verse 15 here, and in Psalm 144, verse 1. In fact, I don't think there's anybody else that says, Yahweh is my to serve, apart from David. This is David's characteristic expression. Yes, I think David wrote this psalm, brothers and sisters, even though the title is not attributed to him. But what the title does tell us about the psalm is this. It says that it is a psalm or song for the Sabbath day. In fact, we're told that Psalm 92 was sung in the Hebrew calendar of worship. Psalm 92 was sung in the morning at the time of the drink offering and the offering of the continual lamb, the first lamb of the morning. Psalm 92 was sung at that particular time, but it relates to the Sabbath day. And one of the Jewish headings for Psalm 92 is this. It says, a psalm or song for the future age, all of which will be a Sabbath. The psalm concerns the rest which remains for the faithful. Now, isn't that an interesting title? I'll just say that again because I think, well, this is crucial. A psalm or song for the future age, all of which will be a Sabbath. The psalm concerns the rest which remains for the faithful. And you'll remember how the Apostle Paul will take up that idea of the Sabbath rest of the kingdom in the book of Hebrews, will he not? But if you've still got your hand in Chronicles, see, this is exactly where we are, aren't we, in terms of the context of David's labors at this moment of time. A psalm of the Sabbath future rest of the kingdom. 1 Chronicles 23. Well, let me see if we can